the glass and left corner to Aginla. Aginla left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
Jones up the left side. Shoots. Miller the same. Rebound. Furland raw by Miller. Nastijan. Score!
Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, welcome to hour one of your Friday, January 28th edition of Flames Talk. Coming at you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. And we talked about Thursday's game in St. Louis being a potential scheduled loss. Third game in four nights, second half of a back-to-back. And it played out that way. They lost 5-1. But it's not to say they played poorly. Like, I didn't come away from that game and I wasn't thinking, like, oh, boy. That was a blowout. Flames weren't even on the same ice surfaces. I thought it was a fairly competitive game with a less competitive score when it was all said and done. I thought for the circumstances, the Flames played pretty well. Few mistakes ended up in the back of their net. I thought the Blues were a significantly better team than what we saw from them on Monday when they got their lunch fed to them 7-1 here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. But, you know, it kind of played out the way that I thought it would, just in terms, or I thought it could. Not, I didn't feel like it was going to play out that way, but, you know, there was that potential for it to play out as just a night that wasn't going to go their way. Top line wasn't as good. Goaltending wasn't as good. Goaltending was much better on the other side, and the Blues were opportunistic with their opportunities. In the end, they win 5-1. What do we think of Thursday night at Enterprise Center?
Yeah, I'm pretty much there with you as well, Pat. I didn't think that the team played a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. For St. Louis, their top three lines really rolled over the bench, played the Flames really well. Not surprising to see Calgary did come out on top of the numbers, like shots, although slight, because I did feel like they were getting their fair chances. But Villahuso stood tall whenever he was called upon. I thought the backline line was probably the best line for Calgary in yesterday's game, stringing together another good performance despite maybe not getting the results. Backline does get the early one on a squeaker by Huso, but he shut the door after that. Top line was maybe a little bit subdued compared to what we've seen over the last couple of games. And I thought the fourth line and the third pair maybe struggled a little bit in a tough back-to-back 3 and 4 nights.
What do you think of the decision to go with Jacob Markstrom? I know that Daryl Sutter said after the game that they've got a four-day break coming up. The backup, Dan Vladar, hasn't won in a month, and they are really focused. I know, it's been a while since he's won, and he hasn't played since the beginning of the month in Tampa and Carolina. And he talked about how they need points, and the urgency's got to be high. They've got to have their guy going. It just and he said it wasn't a hard decision. It was what they had planned out right from the get-go, but I do worry about Markstrom burning out. That's the only thing. I fully am aware that Daryl Sutter and his decisions are far more informed than my outside conversations and my outside theories and all that type of stuff. But I do worry about a goalie that there has been a track record of wearing down and his performance is not being as strong when he is overworked. I worry about overworking him. And 3 games in 4 nights, that's a, you know, with travel in all 3 of those games, now that's a pretty significant workload. And I think it's fair to say he was not as strong Thursday night as he was on either of Monday or Wednesday night.
Certainly. I'm right there with you, because you look at the Saad goal. It's an odd man rush, certainly, but that's a shot from the outside that Jacob Markstrom would typically get a stop on. You look at the second goal as well. Shen capitalizes on the puck bouncing over Monahan's stick, creates another odd man rush. It's a nice play by Shen there, but I think Markstrom probably wants to have a stop there too. So there was a couple instances that I look at and say, maybe, you know, a save certainly could have helped you there. It wasn't the only reason that the Flames came out on the losing side of that game by any stretch of the imagination. But, I don't know, it's certainly easy to look back on the result and say, obviously, you should have put Dan Vladar in. And we both felt like Dan Vladar was going to get the go when we talked about it on Flames Talk before puck drop. Obviously, they choose to go a different way. When you do compare the numbers of their last 5 games, Markstrom's are considerably better despite, you know, a couple of bumps and bruises along the way. Like, Dan Vladar has been sub-900 save percentage in his last three starts. That goes back to January 5th, 6th, and the last one before that was December the 6th. So he hasn't played for a long time, going back to early January, and he hasn't won in an even longer time, and he hasn't kind of posted one of those absolutely stellar performances we saw early on in the season for quite a long time as well. So I understand the hesitation by the coaching staff to go back to Markstrom. Obviously shows that he's feeling much more rejuvenated from that little thing that was nagging him earlier on in January. But in the end, I'm going to kind of digress to the coach here, but I probably would have, like we said, I thought it was going to be a Vladar game.
I did too, even though Markstrom, and I kept the door open. Like, you keep on saying we're expecting or we're thinking, because you keep the door open, you never know. And the only thing that gave me pause was that Markstrom was coming off a shutout on Wednesday and had not gotten a lot of work on either Monday or Wednesday. So you kept that door open. I just... And maybe you don't worry about this as much with a four-day break coming up. After they play on February 2nd in that back-to-back Dallas-Arizona, they've got the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th off without playing games, and they only practice on two of those days for the All-Star break. They don't play again until the 9th. So from that point on, though, with as busy as February is going to be, with as many games on that seven-game homestand, they play the 9th, 10th, 12th, 15th, 16th, 19th, 21st on that seven-game homestand, and they play two more games in the month of February before an absolutely slammed month of March. They still have all those back-to-backs. I do think it's imperative that you get Vladar games. And, you know, I know there are different theories about this. You got to play your guy in a play, but not having Markstrom wear down and potentially tweaking something, wear and tear, I do think that's going to be important, especially as we move in to the post-All-Star break schedule.
And as much as it's going to be a four-day break for the All-Star, I really do feel like for Markstrom it's probably going to be a five, because you've got back-to-back, on the road again, and you're going Dallas and then Arizona. So really feel like we'll probably get a Dan Vladar start in that Arizona game. Like, that just feels like a good place to get him another bit of work.
Markstrom Saturday against Vancouver, against his former team.
I'm thinking
kind of what my gut says.
Markstrom, former team, a little bit of a revenge game coming off the Blues contest as well. So I imagine he wants to get right back in the net. And you say, okay, we got Dallas coming up. That's maybe a bit of a tougher opponent. You always want to make sure you get those points. And if Markstrom's available, you go to him there. And then you got Arizona, who arguably has been better in the past month, but it's still the Coyotes.
Bad.
You still look at their first line and it'd be a borderline third on a good team. So yeah, that's probably what I'm looking at right now for the goalies.
Top line wasn't as good on Thursday night. They had a night where they don't show up on the scoreboard, and it just continues to bring to light the conversation, you know, long-term, where's the offense going to come from outside of the Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Tkachuk trio. Last night, there was one bright spot, and a big-time bright spot in the forward ranks, and this has turned into a bright spot over the last week or so, because this player is really starting to play some better hockey. It's time for our deep dive, brought to you by PlayAlberta.ca. Sports betting's now live at PlayAlberta.ca. Enjoy a $20 free bet on your first deposit. Conditions apply. Must be 18 plus. If you gamble, use your game sense. It's Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose along with you on Flames Talk. And last night, Michael Backlund, 7 shots on net, 12 shot attempts, 9 scoring chances, and 6 of those at high danger. He was a man possessed on Thursday night in St. Louis. On top of that, in his last 3 games, shots on goal, 7-8-7. Shot attempts, 7-8-12. In terms of scoring chances, and these are all individually on his stick, 4-5-9, and the high danger scoring chances, 3-1-6. This is the Michael Backlund the Flames need to see on a more regular basis. A guy who can drive things at both ends of the ice, a guy who can be a force offensively, a guy who can be a force in the offensive possession game, and we always know he's going to be as reliable as they come on the defensive side of things and in the shutdown game. And Labardius says it over and over, and he is right every single time. when Michael Backlund is a two-way force, when he is controlling things at both ends of the ice, the Calgary Flames are a hard team to beat. And this year, we haven't seen him be that guy as much as we have seen in more recent years. And the fact that he is been that for the last three games consecutively, if you're the Flames, is a really promising trend and a trend that you need to see continue here.
Well, and the other thing, too, especially when you look at a game against the Blues, who plays such a good possession game, the faceoffs really come into it as well. And he was 73% against the Blues. Yesterday's game, he was outstanding again. He ends up being 85% all said and done, six faceoffs, one to just a single one that was lost at 5-on-5. And like you mentioned, like the chances for his line were almost completely in his favor. And natural stat trick also has that line at only three chances against. So it's not like you're giving up defense to produce these chances offensively. Like, how many chances did Backlund have on the penalty kill yesterday, yep, too? He was flying all over the place. And this is when Michael Backlund's at his very best. Like, I think that's something that, with Backlund's game, he can kind of regress to a bit of a floor, which is still a reliable middle six center. But when he's playing up here, which I would consider a lot closer to the ceiling, he looks like one of the best second-line two-way centers in the NHL.
It's a good way of putting it.
So I think that when he is on his game, and it's something that we see with him every year, there's always a little bit of ebb and flow to his game, but you got to take advantage with it right now. I think that the line he's playing with maybe has given him a little bit more juice, because him and Coleman, we've known that partnership for the entire season, but adding Mangiapane on the left has been a nice little addition for them, a little bit of offense, a little more offense perhaps than some of the other guys who have been there. So I just really like how everything slots right now.
I like the way that you put it. He's got a high floor, but you want to see him the floor is good. The floor is a reliable NHL or middle six center. I think that's a really good way of putting it, but you want to see him closer to his ceiling on a more regular basis, and that's what you've seen for the last three games. He scored in back-to-back games. He was an offensive force on the penalty kill, as you mentioned, and was really, really strong five on Thursday night too.
And he's getting bounces, right? Like, that's part of it too.
The ebb and
the flow
before
of the game. Yeah, exactly. He wasn't before. Like, that goal that Villehusso allows on Backlund yesterday, like, I watched the replay on that and I was still trying to figure out how it sneaks through him. Like, Husso gets over there and it's a tight angle. But hey, sometimes you got to take advantage of the opportunities, and that's going to come across every once in a while. You're going to get a couple bounces and just keep the momentum going. He also plays quite good against the Canucks.
Yes, and he always has.
Yes.
And the last thing I'd say about what we're seeing from Backlund right now, pucks are being put on net, and that was something that wasn't happening before. He was skying them or just missing them,
yeah,
hammering them just wide or high. He's putting them on. The goal that he scored in Columbus, which was the game winner, it was just a shot on net, and it got there. You take a look yesterday on Thursday, he had the 12 attempts, 7 of them got on goal, which is good.
That's
before
a good
that,
number.
Though. But the two games before that against Columbus and against St. Louis, 7 attempts, 7 shots, 8 attempts, 8 shots. So the attempts were not only coming in high volume, but he was also putting them on net. They weren't getting blocked. He wasn't missing them. That's a good sign, too. And the fact that he and Sean Monahan, I wrote about Monahan over at Flames Nation today, and Monahan is also a guy whose game is starting to come around. And there has been too big of a drop from Lindholm to the rest of the centers this year for most of the season. If what we're seeing from Backlund and Monahan can continue, that's a really good sign for the Flames that there's not such a big gap between their number one center and their number two and three centers.
I want to say it was maybe a week or 10 days ago, something in that timeline, where Daryl Sutter was asked about Elias Lindholm and just how important of a player he is to the group. And Daryl made a point of saying, the rest of our centermen have not been good enough, so I give Elias Lindholm a lot of work, a lot of responsibility, and that type of thing. And ever since those comments just come into mind, so I don't know the exact day, I'll have to go back and try and find it, but just thinking about those comments, ever since then, it feels like Sean Monahan and Michael Backlund have seen their game take kind of leaps and bounds. So you wonder if there was maybe a conversation had or something, or just a realization almost with the guys that, you know, maybe there does need to be a little bit more here as well. So
It's your Flames Talk Deep Dive brought to you by PlayAlberta.ca. Sports betting is now live at PlayAlberta.ca. Enjoy a $20 free bet on your first deposit. Conditions apply. Must be 18 plus. If you gamble, use your game sense. Pat Steinberg, Matty Rose along with you. Your Friday edition of Flames Talk is underway. The Flames fall 5-1 Thursday against the St. Louis Blues. They're back in action Saturday against the Vancouver Canucks here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. We're live in the iconic studio. Powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Maintenance, it's iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Thursday night, Flames fall 5-1 in St. Louis, and now they get set for Saturday, their first meeting this season against the Vancouver Canucks here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. We continue from the Hot Stove Lounge. It's Pat Steinberg, Matty Rose, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our daily Flames roundtable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. For confidence driving on the iciest winter road, start at Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport. Gentlemen, a 5-1 loss in St. Louis, and you know, we talked on Thursday leading into the game about, is it a scheduled loss for the Calgary Flames? Well, I think in some ways it may have turned out to be that way. What are our biggest takeaways from a 5-1 setback at Enterprise Center?
Well, the first thing I would say was that I think the final score was misleading. Not that that really matters, because I do think the Blues were the better of the two teams last night, but I also don't think that they were four goals better than the Flames in that hockey game. And I agree. And we did talk about it yesterday. It was a back-to-back. It was a stretch of three games in four nights, kind of like the Blues had going into that game against the Flames in Calgary on Monday night. They looked like a tired team. I don't think the Flames looked like as tired a team in St. Louis last night, but I do wonder if Jacob Markstrom was a little bit tired, and I do wonder if that top line of Elias Lindholm, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk was a little bit tired. You know, all four of those guys have played a lot of hockey of late and have done a lot of heavy lifting of late, and I just didn't think that, I would say Gaudreau and Tkachuk specifically had as much juice, had as much jump in last night's game as they've had in most games this season, certainly as of late. So, you know, for me, the Flames didn't play poorly. They gave themselves a chance to win the game going into the second and third periods. And I know the Blues pulled away with a couple of goals in the third period, but you know, the Flames were certainly in it following 20 minutes. And again, following 40 minutes, just weren't as opportunistic as the Blues. And just, they didn't quite have that jump in their step that they did in their previous two games. So all in all, you know, I don't feel any worse about the Flames coming out of last night's 5-1 loss to the Blues, but big game tomorrow against the Canucks, because you haven't played a lot of games against Pacific Division teams this season, so the Flames will be looking to bounce back in that one.
Yeah, my takeaways from yesterday's game, you played a tough opponent who kind of looked more like what we had expected when we looked at the roster on paper. They played a really good home game. I did think the Flames certainly held their own in the contest, 5-1, maybe a little bit glorifying for the Blues in that one when it all is said and done. But overall, liked what I saw. I thought, like Derek said, the top line maybe looked a little bit more tired, or like maybe things are just catching up with them a little bit. You know, I go back to Lindholm getting a little bit banged up on that holding call. Johnny got slashed in the first St. Louis game back on Monday. Tkachuk took a pretty nasty one against Columbus as well. So some time off will be good for those guys. But first, you got to take care of business against a pretty tough opponent here in Vancouver. I think there were some things to like, lots to work on, some individual mistakes that can happen when you're playing a tough schedule, but I'm with Derek. It's not feeling like some of the losses that they were having 2 weeks ago to the Senators,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah, I thought guys, they played fine. I didn't think they were bad. I didn't think it was a game where they were on a, you know, like where the two teams were playing on different ice surfaces or anything like that. I thought they were just fine. But I guess the things that I came away from seemed like every mistake, and there weren't a ton of them for the Flames, but when they made them, they ended up in the back of the net, and that's not a criticism on Jacob Markstrom 100%, because I think a lot of the mistakes that did end up in the back of the net were pretty high-quality chances. Like, for instance, the one mistake they made in a pretty good second period was that Adam Rzychka cough up that went right on Brandon Saad's stick. And, well, that was a tough one for any goaltender to stop because that was a perfect pass. And, you know, the goal that was kind of the nail in the coffin, the 4-1 marker, where Robert Thomas made those few moves behind the net and eventually found Jordan Kyrou. Again, I don't know very many goalies in this league that are stopping that. That's a pretty miraculous save if so. So I guess that would be one. And I did think Ville Husso was an edge for St. Louis in this game that they didn't have on Monday, and he was the better of the two goaltenders last night. The Flames got some quality opportunities. Matty, you were saying the 8-for-8 on high danger shots that Husso ended up facing last night. Like he was very strong. I didn't think he stole the game for the Blues, Derek, because I'm with you. The Blues were full marks for the win, and they were the better team. But those were the two things that I kind of came away with from last night's loss.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think Ville Husso is the better of the two goaltenders, and that's more me giving him props than taking a shot at Jacob Markstrom. Again, that's a tough turnaround. Very rarely do you see a goaltender play three games in four nights, and you know, two of those three games were on the road. So mix some travel going from the Pacific time zone to the Eastern time zone to the Central time zone in there as well. And I think the Blues' best players were a little bit better than the Flames' best players were last night. Yeah. I have two other takeaways from last night's game, and I heard you guys talking about it. I guess it would have been last hour or maybe earlier this hour. This might sound crazy to some, but for those who watched the game from start to finish, I suspect they might agree or at least not completely disagree. I know the Flames lost by 4 goals last night, guys, and this would be a rare occurrence for this to happen, but I think Michael Backlund was the best player on the ice for either team last night, and I don't think it was close.
Yeah.
And again, that's not a knock on any of the Blues. They played well as individuals and collectively for sure in that 5-1 win, but that's just more about how good Michael Backlund was last night. My goodness, he was an absolute beast. And Matt, you kind of touched on this, and it's something I meant to get to last night, and I think a goal got scored, and then I forgot. But Johnny Gaudreau has been almost unstoppable in some games lately. And I don't think that one of the ways that you should be able to stop Johnny Gaudreau is by slashing him on his hands and his wrists. We've been down this road before. I think that the referees and the league, specifically the Department of Player Safety, have to do a better job protecting their top players, including the Flames' Johnny Gaudreau. Like, enough with the slashes to the wrists and hands all the time. We saw it in Columbus on Wednesday. We saw it again in St. Louis last night. Like, I think you have to start calling some penalties, and you know, if that doesn't work, maybe suspending or at least fining guys when they do that to Gaudreau and to the other top players in this league. I just don't want to see guys get hurt because teams can't find out another way to defend them.
I know that is a constant topic in Edmonton when it comes to McDavid specifically and the penalties that he does or does not draw. And I don't think that is a conversation that's going away anytime soon, because as much as I don't disagree, unfortunately, I can't sit here and tell you I'm all that confident that it's going to change. I'm really not. As much as I think that you're correct, that that's not, to me, the best way for your league to slow down star players. But anyway, I digress. I think that you're onto something there, whether it's Johnny or Connor or anybody else in this league.
Yeah.
I think sometimes too much is let go. I'm with you 100% in that regard. He's Derek. He's Matt. I'm Pat. This is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Here's a fun one. As Calgary gets set to host the Vancouver Canucks on Saturday night, first meeting between these two teams, there have been links by prominent NHL insiders suggesting that the Calgary Flames are one of the teams most interested in JT Miller of the Vancouver Canucks, a JT Miller that it sounds like will be up for grabs prior to this trade deadline. 1 year left on top of this year at a $5.25 million cap hit. How good a fit would JT Miller be on the Calgary Flames?
Well, he would be a great fit. I mean, he's having a great season. I looked it up. He has 11 more points than any other Canuck. 11, which is ridiculous. He's got 44 points this season, up to 15 goals after scoring a hat trick last night. A guy who is versatile. He can play up and down your lineup. He can play at center. He can play on the wing. You can use him on both the power play and the penalty kill. And he's got a little bit of bite in his game, which I like. and could come in handy should the Flames get to the Stanley Cup playoffs this season. I absolutely love the fit. I'm just not sure how realistic it is that the Canucks are going to trade him to the Flames, because every time a Canuck ends up on the Flames, the Canucks end up with egg on their face, whether it be Jacob Markstrom or Chris Tanev. It's a long list of guys who the Canucks either let walk away and they walked out the door in Vancouver and then through the door in Calgary and had success with the Flames or trades. I just don't know if I see the Canucks trading him in division and specifically to the Flames without getting a King's ransom. And they're probably going to get a King's ransom for him regardless of where they trade him. But I think the Flames would probably have to pay a premium to the Canucks to convince them to trade JT Miller to not only a team inside of their division, but one of their arch rivals. Would I love to see it happen? Absolutely. But I think the price for the Flames would probably be higher than the price for any of the other 30 NHL teams. So I'm just not sure how realistic it is, but I think he'd be a great fit just because of what he can do offensively with his versatility and the fact that he can be a tough guy to play against as well.
Yeah, he's got the versatility, right? He's listed as a center. He shoots left, but he can play on the wing. We've seen him do that before as well. Like Derek talked about, the numbers are there this year for him. The Canucks weren't great this year, but he still kept his head above water when it comes to plus minus for, you know, however much you want to read into that. I think it would be an outstanding fit. And I do think that with the new management in place for the Canucks, like if the Calgary Flames are going to be the team to put the best offer on the table with a new management group in place, I think that they would be foolish for them to not just take the absolute best deal to kind of start off your tenure as the Vancouver front office, like in a positive, because if you end up trading him for lesser, but he goes away to another conference, you know, doesn't really help you that much. If you take a much lesser package, your team's still going to be bad. You still have to play against the Flames for the rest of eternity. So that doesn't necessarily, you know, turn me off that much if I'm Vancouver. But the question then begs, can Calgary come up with a package that would be similar to something that the Rangers could do or the Wild or the Bruins?
Right.
And we talked about their prospect systems with Scott Wheeler of The Athletic on Flames Talk Thursday.
Yeah.
And that came up, right? We asked him about that, and he said that they're a little bit different. Like, the Wild have a bunch of defenseman prospects. So if Vancouver wants to go that way, then maybe Minnesota makes more sense. The Rangers have a little bit of everything. They got goalies, they got forwards, they got defensemen. A lot of defensemen, a lot of picks, and a lot of cap space. So that's what it really comes down to for me. I don't necessarily think that the division is the biggest thing, but I do wonder if the Flames could pony up a package big enough to kind of scare off some of the other suitors.
Just sniffing around, the read that I get is that, you know, Jim Rutherford as the new president of hockey operations, that the in-division stuff is if he's going to get the best deal from a team in division, then he'll make that deal. So I do think that, like, I don't know if I see the Flames having to pay more than any other team just because they also occupy the Pacific Division. But the reason why I think, because I do think it is a longer shot for the Flames, Derek, than some other teams. And it's because while I think the Flames have assets to get trades done, I don't know if they have the depth of assets to get a deal done that turns into more of a bidding war. And so Saravelli's teams that he has thrown out there, the four teams are Minnesota, the New York Rangers, Boston, and Calgary that have expressed interest by Frank's intel in JT Miller. And I just think specifically with Minnesota and New York, they would be able to outbid Calgary if it got to that point. If they're not willing to, different story. But if they're willing to pay the price, and it sounds like the Rangers, where JT Miller has played before, it sounds like they are very interested. And here's the other part that I think is very important when it comes to Miller. He's got 1 year left on his deal, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. And the feel is that maybe south of the border is where he'd like to play. And so if you're the Flames, you'd be paying the same type of premium that any other team is going to pay, but there's more of a chance that he walks when his contract comes to an end. So I think from a fit standpoint, gentlemen, exactly what they need. He would be – there has been a drop-off, and even though Backlund and Monahan have been playing better, for the better part of this season, the gap between Lindholm and the rest of the centers has been significant. That gap is trimmed significantly when you start talking about a guy like JT Miller. And you can also put him on the wing if all of a sudden you're like, oh, boy, Backlund and Monahan, they're playing up here now. Now you have an option to put a guy like Miller on the wing, and he can still be very, very effective there. So I think the fit – perfect. The actual realistic nature of it happening, I'm on the skeptical side with you, Wilsey.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a very reasonable cap hit at $5.25 million this year and again next year, but you also have to think ahead. So you've got to sign Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Andrew Mangiapane, and Oliver Shillington. And the cap isn't going to go up very much from this season to next season. So you know, I'd love to have JT Miller for a couple of years, and I think he would be a great fit with this team. But again, I do disagree. I do think the Flames would have to pay a premium to get him from a Canucks team that's still hoping to get back into the playoff race in the Pacific Division. They're a 500 hockey club. They're 3 points behind the Flames, although they have played four more games. So they're going to have to go on a really good run, probably starting on Saturday, to really get back into the playoff race. But I'm not sure they're ready to throw in the towel. And to me, them trading JT Miller to one of the teams they're fighting with inside of the Pacific Division for a playoff spot would kind of be throwing in the towel, unless it was a hockey trade. But I don't see them making one of those. So we'll see. Love the player. Love the fit. Just not sure how realistic it is.
Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek, Matt, and Pat. Let's finish off with Saturday's test against the Canucks. JT Miller coming off a hat trick on Thursday in a 5-1 win over Winnipeg. How tough a test will the Canucks be tomorrow, Saturday, when these two teams meet for the first time?
Well, it'll be a tough test. They haven't had a very good season. They're 500 overall and 500 both at home and on the road this season. So at least they've been consistent inside and outside of Rogers Arena, but a team that does have a lot of talent. They've had some issues in between the pipes, both as far as the level of play and keeping guys healthy, but they've got lots of skilled players both at forward and on defense, and they're, or at least they should be, a pretty desperate hockey team. Again, if they want to get into the playoff race, picking up 2 points in a proverbial four-pointer versus the Flames tomorrow night would be a pretty good place to start. Now, they had lost three in a row prior to that victory over the Jets last night, so they got that initial bump from hiring Bruce Boudreau as their head coach and went on a really nice run after doing that, but then kind of hit a bit of a wall there. But again, this is a Canucks team that I think back to the offseason, I really thought that there were two teams in the Pacific Division who were going to turn things around from last season to this season. And the Flames were and the Canucks were those two teams. When you think about all of the issues the Canucks had dealing with COVID last season, they just didn't have a chance to have a successful season. And I really thought they were going to bounce back this year. Not only COVID, but also consider the fact they were without their top offensive player, or at least the guy who should be their top offensive player, and Elias Pettersson for most of last season. Now, he's back this season, but doesn't look like the same guy. And they have a number of players who I would say aren't playing to their potential so far this season, but there's still time to turn it around. They've got almost half of their 82-game regular season schedule remaining, having played just 43 games. They're a talented team, a team that's been a little streaky this season, but a team that should give the Flames a test tomorrow night. But it's kind of the same way I feel about the Flames going into most games. Maybe not against the legitimate Stanley Cup contenders like the Panthers and the Lightning and the Hurricanes that we saw on that one road trip, but against teams that are in the bottom third of the standings or even in the middle third of the standings, I feel like if the Flames play their A game, they're likely going to win. And that's how I feel about their chances going into tomorrow night's game against the Canucks. But the Flames have to play their A game. And then it's, okay, let's see what the Canucks have to offer and see how they can play in that type of tough hockey game. Because when the Flames do have their A game, they're a tough team to play against, a frustrating team to play against. But I think it's going to be a good hockey game at the Dome.
A little bit of a wake-up call against the Blues last night, that's for sure. But now you're looking at a Canucks team that certainly isn't as deep as that St. Louis Blues team. Definitely not up front. I think they've got a couple of decent top two lines, but the bottom six certainly pales in comparison to what we saw from the St. Louis Blues. I look at the defense, pretty much the same. You got three guys who are definitely top four guys, maybe someone else masquerading in the top four, and then a relatively sturdy bottom pair as well. The big question is, can you beat Thatcher Demko? Granted, Demko's been missing time due to COVID. They've had to go to Spencer Martin for the last little bit in goal.
He's been good.
And he's been solid, but it does sound like Demko's ready to come back. He was doing his media avails today, so it does sound like he's on pace to get the start against the Flames tomorrow. So that'll be the big thing for me. You maybe lost the goaltending matchup a little bit, Markstrom to Husso on Thursday, but I'm expecting Markstrom to win the one against Demko Saturday night.
I do think it's going to be a tough one for the Flames. And not tough as in, like, they're in tough. I just think it's going to be a good test for them because Vancouver is a significantly different team under Bruce Boudreau than they were before. They're 11-5-2 since Boudreau took over. The games that they lost, they went through that same gauntlet the Flames went through in the Southeast United States, and much like the Flames lost all three games in regulation, but for the most part, they have been a fairly competitive and pretty good team in the games they've played under Boudreau. They're scoring more. The offense is more threatening. Important players that were not scoring at the rates that they needed to score before are doing that again. Those players like Elias Pettersson, like Brock Besser, those guys are certainly producing more than they were before. So I think it'll be a test, but I'm with you, Derek. Like, I do think that when the Flames are on, they've got a chance to be competitive and be in a close third period game with any team in this league. So I think Calgary being at home, I think they're a deeper group, and I do think that they're a team that should win if they play their A game against the Canucks.
Yeah, as long as they don't go into the game thinking that they should win, then I think they're going to be just fine. But as we've seen against teams like the Canadiens and the Senators this season, just because the Flames are better in goal, on defense, and at forward, there's not a guaranteed 2 points in games against the team that are clearly inferior to you. So it'll be an opportunity for the Flames to, in a sense, bounce back. I don't think they played a horrible game last night. It's not like they were as bad as the Blues were on Monday night. And the Blues had a couple of days to stew on that 7-1 loss and rest up and get ready for the rematch. And, you know, they responded well. They played a good game and were the better of the two teams and deserved to win. But, I mean, if you had backed it up a day prior to that 7-1 Flames victory over the Blues, when the Blues were playing in the first half of a back-to-back against the Canucks, St. Louis won that game in Vancouver, guys, but I watched a good chunk of it. I actually think that the Canucks were the better of the two teams in that game. The Blues only had 17 shots on goal and skated to a 3-1 win. So to your point, you know, even in some games that the Canucks have lost since Bruce Boudreau took over as head coach, they've played pretty well in those games. So I'm expecting a competitive one at Scotiabank Saddledome tomorrow night. And one key for the Flames moving forward, fellas, you talked about it earlier this week, Matt. They've now played their last road game in the Eastern time zone. So that tells me they've got a lot of games coming up against Western Conference teams and specifically Pacific Division teams. They've got a much better record against the East than they do against the West this season. And if they're going to be one of the top three teams in the Pacific Division, they're going to have to win more games against those teams than they lose from now until the end of the regular season. And that starts with winning a proverbial four-pointer against the Canucks tomorrow.
Just 3-5-1 against the Pacific Division
yep.
this season for the Flames. So you need to make up some ground there for sure.
No doubt about that. All right, Mr. Wills, we will talk to you Saturday. Have a great rest of your Friday. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, have a good weekend.
He's Derek Wills. He's Matty Rose. My name is Pat Steinberg. The Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Get 20% off all detail packages with focus on restoring paint and interior shampoo. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.